All right, happy hour. It is Thursday, the 16th day of July, the year 2020. Thank you for being with us, Glass in the Afternoon radio program. New Sports Talk, 98.7 AM, 1370, and WGCLradio.com. Wherever you may be tuning us in today, we hope you are enjoying a very spring-like afternoon here in Bloomington. And you need to if you haven't yet, because it's going to get hot. And I mean hot coming up this weekend. 77 downtown, feels like 77. The clouds have been hanging around all day. We haven't had any rain, at least here since, early morning. So there hasn't been much in that department. And as we look ahead to the rest of tonight, we just have a 5% chance this evening and then a 10% chance overnight. So these clouds look like they're going to, it's going to rain. I'm not going to do it. No, get out and do it. It's only 77. And 77 might be the low come Sunday. Let's just put it that way. As we look ahead to the weekend forecast, 65 tonight, so it'll be very nice, as we've been telling you for the last couple of hours. Kirkwood has been closed off since noon today from Grant to Indiana Avenue, so no vehicle traffic east and west on Kirkwood, so all the outdoor seating is out there, and tonight is going to be the night for that. Tomorrow, 91 and 61, partly cloudy skies, barely a breath of wind out of the southeast at 3 miles per hour. Saturday, 93 and 74. Oof, that's just going to be hot. 20% chance on Sunday. 95 and 72. Again, get out, quit, leave work early, do something this evening that allows you to be outside and enjoy it. And then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, yeah, the suntan lotion goes back on. The hydration schedule gets back in if you've got to be working out there or playing golf or you're just messing around in your yard. And we'll keep an eye on the heat index as it moves forward. You can watch with us. Updated forecasts and live radar, find it all at WGCLradio.com. Every Thursday, we check in with our great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. He's the beat writer for IU football and IU basketball. Zach, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, how are we doing?
I'm hot. I'm cool today, but I just look forward and it frightens me but that's fine. We've toughed it out. If we made it through the 4th of July weekend where it was 93, 94, 94, I think we can make it through. We can make it through anything else. Quick update on the scoreboards around the world with 11 minutes of stoppages in West London. It's Manchester United 2, Crystal Palace 0. So 9 more minutes of stoppage time. Goals from Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial have United lingering around the top four. We know the champions of England have already been crowned. We're trying to figure out the European positions for that. Big FA Cup weekend this weekend as well, as Arsenal and Manchester City play on Saturday, United and Chelsea on Sunday at Wembley Stadium. Golf is at Jack's Place at the Memorial, and leading here in the afternoon from the second wave, the afternoon wave, is Gary Woodland. He is your U.S. Open reigning champion. There was no U.S. Open yet. That will come back in September at Wingfoot. He is 5-under through 15. Brendan Steele is your leader in the clubhouse, 4-under 68. Tony Finau is also 4-under par. He is in the afternoon wave along with Lucas Glover and Jimmy Walker. Ryan Palmer, all 3-under, trying to chase down the leaders. Where's Tiger Woods? He birdied two of his first three, but he's played his next 11 holes in 2-over. He is even par along with Justin Rose and Phil Mickelson, some big names there. Rory McIlroy, it's a big field this week. Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka are playing with Tiger Woods. McIlroy is 1-under par, and Koepka is 2-over par, so he is winning that battle, is Rory in that threesome. You can check it out on the Golf Channel. Have it muted like I do in the background, and you won't miss anything as we move on. What other big news we hear from the world of professional sports today? The NFL needs to figure out how they're going to pay for their season if they don't have guys and fans in the stands and everything else, so we'll keep an eye on that. There's a call, I believe, coming up tomorrow for the owners, so something will leak out of there. Victor Oladipo is trying to get his get in shape and get in gear for the Pacers. We talked about that yesterday as well. And now today, We've got a little football on our mind. We are, I don't know, within touching distance, what, 2 weeks from camp, Zach? And you guys had a chance to zoom it up with Coach Tom Allen on Tuesday. What jumped off the page for you, and what do IU fans need to know with how football in this fall sports in general, conference only, what are we doing moving forward?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is not to necessarily characterize everything as, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say camp is 2 weeks away. Yeah, you know, I think the reality is that everyone is still kind of in this, at the moment, working through kind of this ramp-up structure of you can work in groups of this many, and then, you know, it's increased to this many, and obviously everyone's staying tight on the testing, and now the NCAA and some of the major conferences have released even more stringent guidelines for testing. That I think are going to wind up superseding some of Indiana's guidelines in terms of when Indiana's restart plan first came out, the plan was basically only to test A when people came back first, and then B as was deemed necessary by the chief medical officer. I admittedly am off at the moment, off work at the moment, so I haven't looked through the entire NCAA proposal, but I believe it will. I believe it will require more testing. And just slightly more stringent measures. Nothing that's immensely different from what Indiana's doing. Really, I think what it'll be more is basically asking Indiana to, within its existing framework, just do a little bit more. You know, what we heard from Tom Allen was optimism, tinged with a bit of reality. And what I mean
and
by
that's
that
why
is,
that's why I mentioned that he's having to stay the course on essentially assuming camp's going to open, because that's what football coaches do. They can't worry about everything else, right?
To some degree. I mean, yeah, I think there's I think there is a I think the way that I'd put it is, on the one hand, you want people like Tom Allen, who are, whether they like it or not, you know, have a level of influence over the public, to be responsible in what they say. And I think Tom Allen has. I think there are some of Tom Allen's counterparts in other schools, not recently, but certainly as we rewind back to the spring, some comments that were made about, I mean, I think Mike Gundy comes to mind, for example, with his comment about how players needed to get back on campus because the economy of the state of Oklahoma needed, you know, a boost, or, you know, things like that. You do want coaches to be responsible about that sort of thing, because at the end of the day, a football coach is going to influence people's opinions in the same way a politician would, in the same way, you know, a musician would, whatever. On the other hand, it is also, you know, nobody from the Big Ten is going to call Tom Allen in and ask him to make the call on whether they delay the start of the season or move it to the spring or cancel it entirely. No one from the NCAA is going to be calling the Big Ten coaches and saying, hey, what do you think we're leaving the decision up to you. You guys do a vote. Here's the information you voted in. And so I think there is an element of saying sort of like, worry about what you can control, because there's so much that you have to worry about anyway. You know, regular duties on top of everything that's going on. And don't blame coaches for just trying to be optimistic, because they understand what's at stake just as well as anyone else does. And so I think that's why you get the optimism from Tom Allen. Again, I think it's tinged with an acknowledgement of reality that things aren't in a great place. And it at a couple of different points is, you know, pretty direct about wearing a mask, socially distancing. He says, you know, he hasn't been shy about getting on his guys when they've seen on social media or elsewhere guys maybe not following the guidelines that IU Athletics put out. You know, he sort of said, listen, you need to understand what's at stake here. This isn't just about you or what you want. Like, this is the whole, your actions are going to contribute to the success or the failure of this whole thing. And you've got to appreciate your responsibility to the wider group. And he's saying that obviously about his football program, but listen, we could have that exact same discussion about society more generally right now. We all want things back. We all want things back. And we see things coming back in other countries, in other parts of the world, that we are really struggling to get back. And we see, you know, pretty well-traveled, well researched, well, you know, well tested statistics and procedures like wearing a mask, like social distancing, things like that, are allowing those countries not just to get back to what they want to do, but to get their economy going again, to get sports going again. All the, you know, in I mean, even in some countries, they're already putting fans back in stadiums. And we even have evidence in this country that the economy was starting to trend back up again before maybe certain things got opened a little bit too quickly. And then the numbers started to balloon again and everything started to slump again. The point is, we've got a roadmap for this, both from what we have been able to achieve at times in this country in the last few months and also what we've seen elsewhere. And that roadmap can be superimposed onto sports. It has been proven in Europe. It has been proven in Asia. It can work. But people like Tom Allen, I think, understand increasingly that they have the ability to influence people by saying, listen, do you want to see my team play football this year? If you do, we all want these things. We get them back when we are all safe and responsible, not just for ourselves, but at some level for one another. And we look out for one another, and that's how we get back to where we were.
Zach Osterman checking in from the Indianapolis Star, zooming with Tom Allen Tuesday afternoon. And as that's the new day-to-day of handling football camp or whatever we're calling this, with cohorts, and you're with your position players, and everybody gets a talking to before everybody leaves on Friday to make sure they understand plainly and clearly what has to be done if you want to play football. So that's the good news. The other good news, it seems like, is 299 tests in the department and 295 have come back negative. That's also good news. Four is not great, but it's a lot better than 14, 40, or 44. So I would think everybody's pleased in that facet. But as you mentioned, when did they get tested again? It's only as an as-needed basis now that we move
on? Yeah, well, it's an as-needed basis. There are other sort of regular checks in terms of symptoms. But, of course, what we've learned about this virus is that many people can be asymptomatic. I think particularly younger people, healthier young people, can be asymptomatic for days before they develop symptoms. And in some cases, I think can have the virus, carry it, have their body defeat it, and they are all but asymptomatic the entire time. So again, that's where it comes back. And this isn't even necessarily just relative to Indiana. We have talked, you and I, so many times in the last 4 or 5 months about stakeholders and decision-making trees and who's in charge. And I think one of the encouraging things about this sort of NCAA conference concurrent plan that was announced today is that it's people stepping up and leading, because I think that's something that has just been a little bit kind of scattered in college athletics. And I think that's due to the decentralized nature of power in college athletics. And that's a radio show unto itself. But what you're getting now is groups of stakeholders coming together for basically with a plan that they have all agreed upon that they are going to give to everyone and that everyone can follow uniformly. And so just as last week, I think you and I maybe had discussed the Big Ten's move to a conference-only schedule last week.
Yes.
Just as we discussed last week that the Big Ten makes a move like that because that allows the Big Ten to control everything much more and introduce, in terms of protocols, procedures, rules, guidelines, much more uniformity. When you get this ability for the NCAA and the conferences to band together and put this plan out together, that gives you uniformity. And that means that you're not dealing with one school having, you know, being this stringent on certain measures and one school being more or less. And so then how do you make those two meet in the middle when those teams need to play? Hey, listen, as we're speaking, Indiana football just tweeted, we are in control what we can control mode.
That's right.
And
we
and
don't
I think
blink.
That certainly applies to Tom Allen, as we said, but I think it's also going to apply to the NCAA and the conferences. They need to step up and lead because they're the ones that can control the stuff that is going to be more sort of procedural around testing, tracing, quarantining all those different sorts of things. That's where you can't have different decision-making bodies making different calls but trying to interact with one another at the same time. It just won't work.
Zach Osterman's our guest from the Indianapolis Star. When we come back, we'll talk about what the NCAA did say today. Plus, we'll update you on all the watch lists and get Zach's thoughts on Indiana players that are being on those lists, who have been named to him this week. And we'll get you also, there's information from around the conference and some other conferences making decisions. So we'll try to tie this all in together. We'll take a 2-minute timeout. More with Zach Osterman from the Indy Star. Joins us live, as always, on Thursdays next. Gary Woodland and Tony Finau are your afternoon leaders at the Memorial Tournament. Jack's Place, Muirfield Village Golf Club in lovely Dublin, Ohio, about 30 minutes outside Columbus. Finau bogeys 16, so he drops one back. It's Woodland alone. Brendan Steele's in the clubhouse from the morning on 68, 4-under par. Coming up tomorrow, 7 o'clock, is Reds Classic Baseball. We hope it's the final Reds Classic Baseball game of the year. Why? Well, we hope Major League Baseball has their act together and are ready to start. On Friday, the 24th, that'll be the Reds and Detroit, our first game of the season. Yes, that sounds weird to say on July 24th, but that's a week from tomorrow. Tomorrow night, we will get caught up with Scooter Gennett. Four bombs against the Cardinals back in the summer of 2017. Jeanette's four dingers, 13-1 Reds victorious. That'll be some fun, Marty, won't it? We'll get to hear him again. And then Tommy Thrall will take over with the Cowboy coming up on the 24th. Fingers crossed that MLB has everything going well. A quick glance, looks like everything's okay with Major League Baseball today. And then sometimes that's all we're looking for. We're not looking for it's perfect, and today's okay. We get through today, then we get to tomorrow, and we can see what happens there. Tiger Woods is even through 13 holes, if you're wondering about the large cat. He's back in action for the first time since Riviera had two birdies in his first three holes, and it's stalled out since. Doesn't look like the putter's cooperating much today either. All right, Zach Osterman is with us, as always, on Thursdays. And good news for the Hoosiers. You always want to be on these preseason award watch lists. And we've seen Tywan Mullen for defensive player in general, Stevie Scott for the running back position, the Doak Walker Award, Chuck Bednarik for Tywan Mullen. And then we'll add a Biletnikoff, perhaps-er, today. Wop, 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 failure. Wop's a senior already. Time flies, huh, when we're having fun?
I suppose. No, I think you're right about the watch list. Listen, you know, watch list season is always a little bit eye-rolling when you look at how many guys are on these lists. And
but it keeps, you know, college football that in the conversation
every
day. They'll
be reviewed in the season because there will always be people that aren't on the watch list that deserve to be on it and all those different sorts of things. But it's a little bit like a preseason player of the year honor. It's more a nod to what you've done, you know, what over the course of your career and certainly your previous season in particular, you have achieved. And I think, you know, from a coach's perspective, it's also sort of a way of saying, okay, you know, this is the level you're at now. Now are you ready for the next level? It's a way to keep challenging yourself for the best players. You know, the best. I've never understood coaches who, for example, you know, said, oh, we don't think about things like rankings. You know, I understand if you don't think you don't think about being ranked 22nd, but, you know, you don't think about being ranked first or third. You know, I mean, come on. It's you can't ignore that. I remember talking to Todd Yeagley once, 1 year when Indiana was, I think it might have been 2017, 2018, right in that little run. And Indiana was number one in the country for a few weeks in a row. And he said, well, of course we talk about it. You know, I mean, this is the goal. You want to be at Indiana. The goal is to be elite. And this is part of being elite. But we don't talk about it as something we've achieved. We talk about it as something that speaks to what we have done and therefore how we have raised the expectations for ourselves to achieve even more. And I think that when you get to, I think that, you know, when I think about talking to coaches and players about things like these watch lists and preseason rankings and predictions and things like that, it's the people that handle it that way, I think, are the ones that get the most out of it and maybe are the most kind of level-headed about it, because what you're basically saying is it's not an achievement to be on the watch list, but it does allow you to have the confidence to say, all right, I'm going to take my game up another level now.
And it also sends a message to your competitors that you're doing what you should be doing and you're being recognized for doing so. Nobody likes to talk about being number one, but when you are number one, I think that's the angle Todd's bringing. That's what we expect from this program. But until you are number one in a poll or a point in the season, you're not. So it is something to strive for. But again, it's like vacation. The fun part's getting there, but you're not there. It has nothing to do with anything except get people going. The watch lists are great because they keep college football in the churn at times of the year when they're not churning. So it's like the preseason polls in basketball. We'll all yell, hoot, and scream about, well, that's what they did last year, not this. Yeah, it's so everybody gets talking about it. And you know what? In this trying summertime, it's nice to just opine about these award seasons as opposed to sitting around and worrying about all the other real things that are going on. Sometimes it's just nice to remember why Taiwan Mullen is just one of 11 sophomores that are up for the best defensive player in the country.
Yeah, well, and it can also speak to think about someone like Taiwan Mullen, who, you know, obviously he comes to Indiana with a bit of fanfare. He's an All-American. He obviously comes from a football family. Older brother in the NFL, younger brother who looks very much like he's going to be a high-level prospect as he comes up. I think he still goes to the same high school that Mullen and his older brother graduated from, Coconut Creek. And so there's some expectation there. But who would have thought that Taiwan Mullen, by the start of his sophomore season, I would argue anyway, is already probably one of the top, certainly no worse than top 10, maybe even top 5, single coverage cover corners in the Big Ten, you know, and I think has changed the way in which we think about, well, I think it's certainly true that it has changed the way that Indiana's coaching staff feels about its secondary, because I think you look, for example, at their move, they're bumping Jamar Johnson back to safety. They think, well, okay, Jamar Johnson wasn't playing corner, but Raheem Lane was. Now he's at safety. Now Jamar Johnson's at safety. Why are we making those moves? Because we want better. Because those guys are too good in coverage to not have on the field. But guess what? You got the Husky position covered with Marcelino Ball and potentially Bryant Fitzgerald if that's where he winds up playing most of the season. And Taiwan Mullen is taking care of a lot of your, basically one whole side of the defense in terms of cornerback position. Then the other one will be Jalen Williams and Reese Taylor. And so it can change the entire way you think about, you know, how you scheme defensively. It can open up possibilities for you, can allow you to do things you wouldn't do otherwise because you have someone who's so talented. Again, listen, it's nothing's proven, nothing's gained, nothing is achieved simply because of a name on a watch list. But it speaks to kind of a pinpoint in a career trajectory, so to speak. That's probably the best way to put it.
Well, and the other part, as you just mentioned, it highlights the secondary of Indiana, so they must be doing something correct to get one of those guys on. Again, we're not talking about the best cornerback in football. We're talking about the best defensive player. So this is not a position-specific watch list he's on, right? This is for the entire defense.
Right, yes. The Biletnikoff Award – or not the Biletnikoff, the –
Bednarik.
Yes, the Bednarik Award. Forgive me for getting them confused. but the Bednarik Award is for all of defense, as the Maxwell Award is for best offensive player.
Gotcha.
The Bednarik Award and the Maxwell Award are effectively offense and defense. And of course, there's the Heisman, but that's best player overall.
So they break it down into these categories, and it's nice to have the recognition, nice to be one of only 11 sophomores. And by the tone and reeling off of names there just a minute ago, I wouldn't be ridiculous as an IU football fan to say that it sounds like the secondary is the deepest part of the defense.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. Certainly, at least in terms of kind of proven talent. I mean, listen, I think they go too deep at basically every position on the defense right now, Indiana. But I think in terms of what you've got proven when we're talking about you know, going position by position, you've got three guys for two spots at corner and Jalen Williams, Tywan Mullen, Reese Taylor. Those are all guys you trust. They're guys who've played since they were freshmen, two juniors and a sophomore. You go to Husky, you've got a redshirt senior. And I think what is Brian Fitzgerald, a redshirt junior at this point?
Lost a year somewhere in there.
And you go back into safety and you've got guys you recognize. I mean, Devon Matthews has played for 2 years, his first 2 years of college. Juwan Burgess has played a ton of snaps. Again, you move Raheem Lane, who's your most experienced corner, back to safety. You move Jamar Johnson, who was playing a lot at Husky last year and had quietly one of the more highlight-filled seasons of any player on that defense, back to safety. You can move those pieces around as much as you want. Let's say somebody gets hurt. Raheem Lane can flex back out to corner. Jamar Johnson can play corner if they need him to, or he can roll down to Husky. You can pull Brian Fitzgerald back to safety. There's so much you can do in that group. I think it's the deepest, not just in terms of how many bodies you have, but also the deepest in terms of how many veterans you have, how much proven production you have, and how much maybe versatility you have too, frankly, in the sense that there's a lot of pieces in those five positions that can fit into multiple spots.
Is this when the pain from growing pains goes away? All the reason we're talking about all these kids getting all these reps and playing in all these games is because all of them played as kids, literally as freshmen. Is this the fruits of that labor?
Yes. I mean, the answer is yes. And it's obviously there were growing pains. If you think back to kind of Tom Allen's first two seasons, and you know, this is something that I always kind of wind up documenting and the recruiting class recaps that I do kind of November time, looking back basically 3.5 years earlier at what kind of a recruiting class sort of matured into. There were a couple classes there that just got hit with a lot of injuries, some guys that didn't quite kind of fill out their potential the way that Indiana thought it. The injuries were a big part of it when you look back at guys that just lost a lot of time, if not eventually careers, to career-ending injuries. But Indiana was in a spot in Tom Allen's first couple seasons where they didn't have a lot of seniors. And they haven't had, frankly, Tom Allen's first season, they had a fair number of seniors. The last 3 years, they haven't had a ton. And that speaks to the fact that those classes just didn't quite matriculate the way that you thought. And so guys either fell away because of health issues or they fell away because they transferred. And Indiana had to count on younger players. But now those younger players it sounds dumb, but now those younger players are veterans. They're older. Now you've got Reese Taylor, who had to play young, but guess what? He's played a ton. Jamar Johnson had to play young, but he's played a ton. Micah McFadden had to play young, but he's played a ton. You go on that defensive line, Michael Zimba's a great example. Jerome Johnson's a great example. And they're still going to be young players. I mean, listen, Sio Nofoa-Gatatoa was a true freshman
last
year.
Well done.
I've said it enough to know it now. Played a ton of snaps at nose tackle, and he'll probably play a ton more this season, whenever this season is played. But one way or another, Indiana did at one time have an unusual number of freshmen and sophomores playing on its defense. Those guys are now redshirt sophomores, juniors, seniors, redshirt juniors, redshirt seniors. And so, yes, you are seeing the benefits of some of that in a way that you wouldn't have before.
Zach Osterman's our guest. He's checking in, talking a little football. Saw Tom Allen on Tuesday, did a little Zoom with him. Again, not a lot of football to talk about yet. We're just hoping the season gets going. The Big East has canceled all non-conference fall sports in men's and women's soccer, volleyball, cross country, and field hockey. So they add their name to the list, the MEAC. All fall sports have been canceled there. Those are the historically black colleges and universities. The Horizon League, they're not doing anything until October 1st. But Bristol, they put 20,000 people in the stands last night, socially distanced for the NASCAR shootout at Chase Elliott one. So there's some different ways of looking at things, obviously. And Indiana University hasn't really commented yet, Zach, and they're not under any guise to do so. But we heard from Michigan earlier in the week that their athletic department announced today that the 2020 football season, if they're able to have one, maybe it's going to be reduced crowd or games held without fans. But here's what they determined. There will be no football season tickets. Status as a season ticket holder will remain unchanged, and season ticket locations will be retained for the 2021 season. If the University of Michigan, we're talking about 115,000 fans a game here, right? That's a lot of people. If the University of Michigan is going to have fans at Michigan Stadium, all home games will be sold on an individual game basis, with sales limited to current season ticket holders and students. There will be no ticket sales to the general public. And then they go on to tell you, if you are a season ticket holder or a student, what that means. Illinois today, they came out with stuff. Memorial Stadium, that one at Illinois, will be seated to a 20% capacity with social distancing and reserved seating. Face coverings will be required in public areas. 6-foot social distancing will be observed in the halls and concourses. No tailgating in Shambana this season, according to their athletics department. They're going to clean everything up. Concessions are grab and go, and all your tickets will be via mobile device. So we're not all going together at once. It seems it's program to program, but that's what some of our cohorts are doing here in league play.
Yeah, I mean, that I think will probably stay a fair bit more program to program, as you say. I mean, could there come a point where the Big Ten or the NCAA, you know, just sort of comes out and says no fans in the stands? I suppose, but for a variety of reasons, and I don't want to list them because we could talk about them if you want, but I really think that it would drag us into the weeds.
Well, don't drag us.
For a variety of reasons, I think that if any sort of ruling body were to go to the individual schools and simply say, here is your ticket policy, you can only do this much, or you can't have any fans, or whatever. To be honest with you, I think if we reach that point, then we would just be talking about a suspension of play anyway. Like, I don't think that's something where the conferences would step in, would feel compelled to step in, or the NCAA for that matter, and sort of, you know, put down a blanket protocol, but not feel compelled to just say, it's not safe right now, we're just not doing it, if that makes sense.
And if the safety you see from other sports, as you mentioned earlier, are we learning anything? Are we getting anything from the protocols? Are we seeing anything that's happening? You mimic that right now, but that doesn't mean once things get started, which is, again, this is almost, what, a month and a half from now? 6 weeks from now? That's a long time in COVID-19 years. So I wouldn't write any of this down in permanent marker regardless.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's absolutely the way to see it. And it's complicated, and I get why it's difficult for people. But you know, this is just where we are. And I've said this in different ways before, and maybe this sounds like smug media. I suppose really care that much at this point. You know, the virus doesn't argue with you. Like, you can, the NCAA, for example, released a chart today, basically pointing out where Europe's COVID numbers were, where I think a couple of Asian countries' COVID numbers were, where the United States' COVID numbers were, and where the NCAA had expected or hoped the United States' COVID numbers would be when it announced back in, what, May, that it was beginning the process of, that it was opening sort of a roadmap back to athletic activity. And of course, I mean, the numbers did not jive at all. It was, you know, the current numbers are way too high for what the NCAA said it expected. And you got the predictable sort of reaction on Twitter, and my reaction has been all along, you can argue at this stuff all you want, the virus won't argue back. Like, it's not listening.
It doesn't care what you think. It just moves. Yes, it moves on, sadly. And part of that NCAA, what we've seen from them today, the resocialization of collegiate sport, developing standards for practice and competition. You know what? I'm looking at the document online. It looks heavy online. Even though that I can't pick it up on, it looks like it's a heavy, heavy lifting part of it. The question I'll ask for you when we come back is, how important is it that Mark Emmert did speak out and comment today? And what does that mean going forward? Or is this really going to be up to the conferences to sort out as we move down the road. Zach Osterman's our guest from the Indianapolis Star. 2-minute timeout for Network Indiana News, and we're back with Zach next. 5:44 at WGCL. Glass in the afternoon. Thank you for being with us. Are you looking to update your floors or put in a new shower or backsplash? Well, head to Carpets Plus Color Tile. They can help you out, and they have the largest selection of Karastan flooring in South Central Indiana. Carpets Plus Color Tile, Liberty Drive across from Menards here in Bloomington. David Hayes, Your Money, follows us here at 6 o'clock. Then CBS Sports Radio takes you home. Tomorrow night at 7, we will have Classic Reds baseball. Scooter Jeanette's 4-home-run game against the St. Louis Cardinals back from 2017. And then Saturday morning, the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman and the gang will get your weekend off to a fantastic start. Leaderboard is piling up here in the afternoon at Memorial. We told you Gary Woodland was on top. He's now been joined by Texan Ryan Palmer, and Tony Finau has added another birdie. So three players in the afternoon wave, the lowest rounds of the day on the course. Brendan Steele is your clubhouse leader. He played this morning 68-4 under par. Tiger Woods had a birdie to get it to -1. Last time I looked up, he was throwing his club, so I'm guessing he's going to take a bogey or worse the next time he pops back on the screen. Zach Osterman joins us from the Indianapolis Star every Thursday. And news out of Spain this afternoon, Real Madrid are champions for the first time in 3 years. The Kings 11 defeated Villarreal 2-1 this afternoon. Karim Benzema scored twice to give him a 2-0 lead, and then Villarreal pegged them 1 back, but that's it. So time to break up Barcelona, huh? What a bunch of losers. Can't win anything anymore. But that's how it goes in Spain. To the victor wears the crown, and the crown is the Kings 11 of Real Madrid. Not terribly surprising. That's usually a two-horse race. And frankly, Barcelona had not played well since the return. So the champions of Spain are Real Madrid. So there's your soccer update. Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, the man who has, well, what kind of power? Well, I'll ask you that here in a second, but here's his quote from today. Today, sadly, the data points in the wrong direction. If there is to be college sports this fall, we need to get a much better handle on the pandemic. Now, we know the conferences have the power. We know that Mark Emmert's just a figurehead, but when he goes out of his way to make statements like this, I guess we should listen.
Well, the thing I'd say is Mark Emmert's not a figurehead if he stroked the people who empower him don't want him to be. I mean, you know, the NCAA has as much power as the conferences, the member schools are willing to provide. And so if the big schools, if the Power Five basically say they want the NCAA to be a clearinghouse for all this, they want the NCAA to be the sort of establishing governing force in this entire conversation, then that will happen. That can happen, you know, and so I don't think it's ever unimportant what Mark Emmert says. It comes back to this thing I said before the break, which is when people like Mark Emmert say things like this, you immediately get a reaction, particularly on social media, from people who are varying degrees of convinced that that's wrong, that it's what's being said is somehow political, what's being said is somehow, you know, picking a side. And that's why I say to anyone who thinks that the virus isn't listening, like this is as black and white as it gets. Like, you can deny science if you want to, but it's still there. It's going to keep circulating. And again, we have proven case studies from across the world that say that if we're careful, if we're smart, if we listen to our leaders and follow, you know, the scientific advice of experts, okay, it's still going to be an issue. It's still going to be present in our lives, but it's not going to be something that is just it's not going to be something that is debilitating to our day-to-day routines and the things that we enjoy to do. Many of them, not all, of course, but many. I mean, listen, as an example, I have a good friend who lives in Berlin, and I'm not exactly sure what he does, but his work takes him all over Europe. And he travels all over Europe. I was talking to him this week because he was in Liverpool, and I was telling him places to see and geeking out over his pictures and all those different things like that. You know, it's just, he can do that. Now, can I go to Liverpool right now? I mean, I don't know exactly what the travel restrictions are to the United Kingdom, but more broadly, you know, this country is not in a place where I think I'd feel comfortable getting on an airplane. And I know some people are, and that's fair, but it's important for people like Mark Emmert to just keep saying the same thing, because you've got to get through to everyone that there is a way to knock this down. You know, Robert Redfield, the director of the CDC, said either late last week or early this week, if everyone wore a mask for 4 to 6 weeks, his words were, we would drive the virus into the ground. That's all it would take.
Let's do it.
But, you know, he says that, and you get the reaction we talk about. And again, I don't want this to sound political, and it shouldn't have to be something that we have to constantly, you know, sort of preface by characterizing it as not political. It should just be something we all kind of understand. But, you know, here we are. Wear a mask. Wash your hands.
Let's do it. So we can get on with other things like football and everything. There's a reason the NBA is in a bubble. There's a reason MLS is in a bubble, because that's the only way these things can happen, because everybody isn't wearing a mask. So now we went from short-term loss for long-term gain to short-term gain to long-term loss. And we'll have to just figure out how that works. And part of it's going to be, when all these people come back for college football or fall sports, whatever, everybody says fall sports, they really mean college football, because the financial ramifications are true. There's nowhere to hide
from. I said on our podcast this week, I said, for a number of reasons, I don't see a world where there are college sports if there is not college football. Number one, I think it is probably the most difficult of the sports to figure out from a safety perspective in all of this. So if you can't figure out football, I mean, other than like maybe something like golf, you know, if you can't figure out football, I'm not sure that you're going to be in a position to feel like you can figure, you know, you can figure out other things. Number two, football is what makes the money. And the reality is that while we are fond of talking about sports as a quote unquote big business, the reality, you know, I mean, Indiana, I think, cleared somewhere between 6 and 7 million in athletics in net profit last year, revenues less expenses in athletics. Now, if you and I sat down somewhere in the halls of the Bloomington Chamber of Commerce, how many businesses just in Monroe County would we find with greater turnover than that? I bet it'd be a few. I know that there's big dollar signs attached to budgets, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's mass amounts of money rolling in. And football makes the money. And if you're not making money on football, you're already bleeding significantly. So you're going to have to maybe say, well, we can't play anything else. And then the other thing, too, is I think football is just kind of the North Star. You know, I mean, there's a reason that they call Big Ten Football Media Day the Big Ten Kickoff Luncheon. It is the event that opens the new athletic season in the Big Ten every year. And, of course, it's football-centric, obviously. But, you know, football is sort of the North Star of certainly fall sports in college, but I would argue college sports in general. And if you can't find a way to do football, I don't see a world where you find a way. And certainly if, put it this way, certainly if you were to say something to the effect of, we're going to delay the start of the season or even push it to the spring, there's no way that you're going to make that call about football, but say, oh, but volleyball, soccer, you know, wrestling, tennis, golf, all that stuff's safe. All that stuff's fine. If you're saying that football needs to be delayed, then there's really no justification for saying anything else.
And I don't disagree with any of that, but you – I would think, and again, I'm not privy to any other information on this. To me, just from working at these events, I think it would be a lot easier to do a volleyball match with no fans if you're not playing football or not. Are you worried about the travel? Are you worried about – because just the gross numbers of football is what you worry about. Why wouldn't you be able to do something as simple as – not simple, I don't mean it in that sense, but having 35 people in an arena with the net playing volleyball, why couldn't you do that, I guess would be my better question.
Again, I think it just comes down to the idea if you feel compelled, if you feel it's necessary to delay your flagship sport, then it's kind of hard to make an argument for not delaying all sports. And I also think the financial aspect of it comes into play as well, which is, you know,
no travel means no hotels, you got to pay to run the facilities.
Yeah. You got to pay to travel to places, even if it's only in conference, whatever. You've already got money going out the door every day. You know, I mean, this is, and I know we're kind of short on time, so right, we won't get too deep into it, but this is the conversation that's being had in the European transfer window about all these rumors of, you know, oh, Liverpool's going to buy this player, Bayern Munich's going to buy this player, whatever. Nobody understands, like, these clubs spent 3 months just bleeding money because they had to pay everyone and they had to keep the operation running and they were making no money. And now you've cut a massive hole in their budget for game day revenues that they don't know when that's coming back. And that's true of college athletics as well. I mean, you know, you talk about Illinois earlier in the show. There's nobody out there saying, well, we're going to have a full stadium, we'll be fine. Like, at exactly. best, you're saying half, 20%, 15%, whatever. So you've got this massive hole in your the revenue half of your revenues and expenses projection already. It's also kind of financially difficult, and you're going to be paying salaries, scholarships. You know, you're going to have to pay the bills on the buildings to keep the lights on and the water running and on and on. It's just going to be kind of hard to justify running other programs when the one that makes all the money and pays the bills for all those programs isn't making any money.
Well, there you have it.
I think it's again, that's why I think it's a variety of factors.
It's not a competition issue. It's a financial issue. I think that's what might get lost in this shuffle. Hey, great job as always, my friend. I enjoy it. Enjoy your time off. We'll get caught up next week. I'll see you before that at some point, probably. And read everything at Zach Osterman, theindystar.com, and we'll talk to him next Thursday. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as always, Glass.